Good morning, everybody. Hello. How is everybody doing? I know I'm blessed compared to where I came from. My name's Tim. I'm your host here today at the Recovery Center podcast, and I love doing what I do. I love being your host because I always believe that I have the possibility of meeting that one person who's struggling like I did for so many years. And, you know, as fate has it, right, Daniel's our guest today. Daniel!
What's up, everybody? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, man. Appreciate thanks for it. Coming. Yeah, as fate would have it, right? We met on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
And we've been married ever since.
Well, we met in LinkedIn, and then we ran into each other at a first responder training.
That's right.
And I was like, I know you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I love bringing qualified, professional people here to this podcast because, you know, mental health is such a bugger, and it's
It's health.
Correct, and it's so prevalent right now, and of course, addiction comes right along with that. So, to have a professional here is not only makes me happy because I know how important it is. It's just the right thing to do because I couldn't do the right thing for many years. So my sobriety date's April 15th, 2007. And I stopped getting out of that little F-U-C-K box, you know. People and all you're saying. But it truly was one day at a time.
100%.
And I haven't done this in a while, you know. Do one day at a time. Keep coming back. Woo-hoo! I haven't done that in a long time because it's true. So, hey man, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Tell us what's up. What's going on?
Oh man, a lot. Also in recovery. Also a therapist. I was a therapist before I was in recovery, or I thought I was in recovery. I was one of those people. I thought I was sober when I really wasn't sober. You ever met those?
What, like still smoking like 10 doobies a day, you mean?
No, just like I was on prescriptions.
Oh, they were just prescribed.
I got sober from alcohol and illicit substances in grad school. And then I was heavily addicted to prescriptions for like 7 years.
Man, the pimp's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, oh my God.
Oh my God.
Because listen, I had a therapist, I had a psychiatrist, I went to AA, I had a sponsor, I worked steps, you know what I mean?
Man, I'm good.
I'm good.
Yeah.
And like everyone in my life kept telling me like, maybe you're not so good, but like I had a lot of success on the side too. Like I was a clinical director, I started one of the first substance abuse programs for a prison in Georgia. Crazy. My last job was I was the CEO of a treatment center. Well, I was actively using.
People like in our realm, we're so clever, so resilient, so like we're the only people I know that can leave the house with no money and get high for a week. You know, it's like
it is true.
And it's true, right? It runs from Park Bench to Park Avenue.
Yeah,
you just heard this guy gobbling prescriptions like M&Ms, and he's the CEO starting programs and the corrections department.
Oh, and when it came crumbling down, it wasn't because of substances; it was because of mental health.
Yeah.
That was I was convinced myself I was bipolar and like all my troubles were unaddressed mental health. I remember like my whole family when they were like sending me away to treatment, I was so upset because they wouldn't send me where I wanted to go, which was a mental health facility.
I'm not mental.
And, you know, I would have never picked Florida. That's another thing. Like this was the last state I would have ever chose to come to.
But this is where all the magic happened, right?
Well, yeah, this is where I started my businesses. I met my wife. I have 3 kids. Wow. So like, it's one of those. It's definitely one of those God moments where it never would have been my choice, and yet I wound up with all this cool, really cool stuff. So I tell people all the time, like, trust the system. Yep. Relax. Like, trust your team.
Yep.
Like, we actually know what we're doing.
Yep.
Maybe your best thinking isn't the way to go, especially if you're in early recovery.
Like, I know it's not the best way to go.
So many people think it is, though, man. They struggle.
But just think about this, people. I mean, just be like respectful to yourself for like 5 seconds, because everything is now. So just give me 5 seconds. You can't fix the problem with the same thinking that created the problem.
But we're not on drugs anymore, so we should be able to do it.
Maybe belief systems, you know, or ego. Well,
they don't give
what
time
do you think
for
it
the
is, ego, belief systems.
I think it's a little bit of everything.
Fear. Right? That's all mixed in there, right?
Yeah.
Ego, fear,
ego,
belief
fear,
systems, trauma, PTSD, right?
Yeah.
addiction over a certain period of time long enough kind of dulls some sensors.
Well, the brain, there's definitely damage to the brain, you know what I mean? Right. And they're like, a lot of people still, I don't think, fully understand addiction. They still think it's a substance-based thing instead of like a brain disease.
Yeah.
So they're like, I eliminated this. I should be able to think and function.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not realizing that the brain can rationalize anything. Yeah. If you give it enough time or opportunity, right?
Like we both see it. We both work in treatment. So we see people leave and make really bad decisions.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
You know, a week into it, a month into
it. Some of them don't even come back.
Of course. Scary.
Unfortunately, I just experienced an overdose.
Oh, yeah.
Went against all the recommendations. All of them.
Yeah.
And, you know, took the control back and... Control is an illusion, my friends, because if you're trying to control something, it's already out of control.
Yeah. Well, the addict in us also wants to get quick. Like, we want to get well quick.
Oh, my God.
You know what I mean?
Want it yesterday.
I was using for 20 years. I should be able to get sober in 2 weeks.
But you don't look like a crackhead. Whatever.
Me?
Whatever a crackhead's supposed to look like. Yeah. It runs from Park Bench to Park Avenue and everything in between.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Right?
It's wild, you know?
It never ceases to amaze me.
No.
So you've been a clinician, how many, licensed?
I've been working for about 15 years, licensed in Georgia, Florida, South Carolina. But like that was a whole process. When they find out you're a using CEO therapist, they get a little upset. So like,
so is it recorded somewhere like in the system?
Oh yeah.
Well, you got like popped, you mean? Or
yeah, there's definitely
like it's in the DCF file or ACA file or something.
Yes. So like anytime I apply for anything, everybody that does anything with therapy insurance, I have to do like this full disclosure, and then I have to usually write a letter on how my life has changed.
Correct.
But like when I first got in trouble, I was arrested for 9 felonies.
Wow.
And I was also selling certain substances.
Yeah.
So I had to sign a letter in Georgia from their attorney basically admitting to all my crimes.
Yeah.
So that will forever be attached to my license.
Yeah.
So if you pull me up in Georgia, I always think it's funny when people like on the TikTok world, they question you all the time. They're like, you're not real. And I'm like, everything's public knowledge. Like,
oh, he's real, my friend.
you can trust me, I know. On the Secretary of State's webpage, and they show you the
put
three
your name in, right?
documents that are attached to my license forever.
Oh, I know that for a fact. My wife's an LCSW in Florida and comes right up.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So that was a whole process. Yeah. You know, it was about 5 years to get everything back. Yeah.
Have you been hearing about, I've been hearing about like the reciprocity. I need to hear it for me to get it out.
Yes, dude. I have dyslexia and a speech impediment.
Yeah.
I get stuck on, like, don't ask me to say the EMDR thing.
And yeah, I wouldn't do that. But that's another thing about the human spirit. Yeah. You know, we have this incredible creative intelligence about it. You got a guy that's so bright. So motivated, in the trenches, gets a master's degree, has a certain discipline to him. Like, I would love to get a master's degree, I think, because I love knowledge.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, my recovery's taught me how to respect myself and meet myself where I'm at, right? Because as a counselor, I'm expected to meet clients where they're at. So I just don't have that discipline, but I used to beat myself up because my dad was a doctor in Manhattan. You know, I'm just a loser, already smoking weed, doing bongs down the basement, drinking inappropriately and acting inappropriate. But my dad's a today I don't do that, man. I'm just not that guy. I don't have the discipline to sit down and do it.
Yeah.
You know, I have discipline in other ways and areas. Like yesterday, I'm training for a 98-mile walk at 63 years old. I got my ass kicked yesterday. I did 9 miles in 92-degree weather.
It's 98 in one day?
I'm going to take me 8 days.
8 days?
But I was training. I did 9 miles yesterday in 92-degree weather. Like, it takes a certain discipline, a different discipline for me than sitting at the desk studying, writing papers and all that. I had to take over the shopping on the weekends when my wife went back to FAU.
Yeah.
But she only went back because she loved what people like you and I do. She loves seeing my recovery. She's like, I want to be part of this somehow. And And that was cool, you know. And then one day it just came out, like, you'd be a great therapist. I know you would. Because yeah. She was like the cheerleading coach at her high school. She's at Wellington High School in Palm Beach County here, yeah. You know, 8 years. And she was teaching anatomy and biology. So she's smart, the yeah. AP kids. You can get an associate's degree in that high school now.
Nice.
At Wellington.
I did a little bit of that.
Did you?
Yeah, I went to my last year of high school. I went to college.
No, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're bright, man. And so are you and anybody else.
Feels weird. Still feels weird to get compliments.
Yeah, you know? That's that core still, yeah, right? It's a lifelong process, yeah. I think. You know, there's some things like sometimes I still feel like that, like I'm not worthy or I don't sound smart enough.
I go automatically to the other data, you know what I mean? You're smart. Well, yeah, but I don't really read very well, or, you know, I didn't do this.
We switch out.
Yeah, of course, so quickly. And I know everybody out there gets it, you know, we don't do it to ourselves.
Yeah, especially if you have a certain following. They're following you because you're kind of like them, and they're like you. And
my peoples.
Yeah, we're all kind of like, no disrespect, we're kind of like all from the island of misfits, you know?
Of course. Well, listen, if you want to build rapport quickly with your client, you know, you got to be a human in front of them and let them know. Like, my clients know, like, I'm in recovery. I also struggle with depression, anxiety,
I think vulnerability is good to a certain extent as a professional. You know, you got client, professional. I think when appropriate, right? Yeah. I think it's good.
Does this help the relationship or does it harm it? Am I saying this for me or am I saying it for them?
Yeah.
You know, if I'm saying it for them,
yeah.
Especially with addiction, I feel like we need to speed up stuff sometimes.
Me
when
too.
We're working with certain people and we know the risk of what they're going through, you need to like pull out all the tricks. Like, I need the ace up my sleeve. I need to let you know, like, hey, you can trust me. Let's go. Like the first responder stuff.
Yeah.
Like, for you to build rapport with somebody who naturally does not want to trust you because of the environment, you got to go in
100%
as fast as possible.
Correct. Like, think of a police officer. They get lied to every day.
Oh, yeah.
Every day and all day.
And coming to one of us is not part of the system.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Correct. So, yeah, I mean, so if you're wondering why I'm doing 98 miles at 63 years old, I have a 501c called Stomping Out the Stigma.
We love it.
And I started as a Marine who really spiraled in the Marine Corps because I wasn't talking about my mental health or my alcoholism. It started out for me as the ultimate lubricant.
Yeah. Why'd you choose the Marines, though?
Because I loved it.
Yeah? You did?
Yeah, and it ended up being the ultimate separator.
Oh, yeah.
Well, because I grew up in a very wealthy area, right? Dad, doctor in Manhattan, became the personal doctor for two CEOs of American Express. But I grew up around sports legends because it was right outside of New York, the Meadowlands in Jersey.
The city like went to live there.
Yeah, I could get Giant Stadium in 35 minutes. I get the Yankee Stadium 45 minutes. Yeah. Get the Shea Stadium like an hour. It's that part of Jersey that you could just boom, boom, boom. So a lot of the execs.
Would think your family would not want you to go into the military.
No, my mother. My mother was devastated.
Yeah.
I even had my friends like you saying, what the hell are you doing?
Of course.
Like, what are you doing? You're Dr. Roberto's son. Are you crazy?
Yeah.
I said, no, I'm not crazy. I just don't think this is how most of the people live. I want to see how the other half lives.
Wow.
Because I've seen all the stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was never that kind of guy. Like, I've always been I don't even know if it's a fault.
Yeah.
I'm just a loyal guy. Obviously, before I got well.
Yeah.
And I mean well. I'm recovered. I practice a program of recovery. I haven't switched out. I'm very grateful for where I'm at. But prior to that, you know, I always was loyal to a fault.
Right.
I'm not loyal to a fault anymore because my loyalty doesn't have attachment. Because for me, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Right? And the 12 steps, I'm a 12-step guy to the max.
You can work them if you're sober, brother. I mean, not sober.
Correct.
Like anybody can do the 12 steps.
100%.
They're beneficial.
Yeah.
It's a great program.
Yeah, but, you know, it's principle before personality.
Yeah.
So the principle of it is, right, it's a human being down and out.
Yeah.
That's my obligations, my duty. I'm loyal. Not to a fault anymore, because if they want it, great. If not, I know how to back up today. You know what I mean?
Of course. A lot of people struggle with the whole loyalty.
So when I went in, I wanted to go see what the other half looked like. My mother said, oh, my, they're going to change. Don't do it.
Yeah.
And then when I graduated boot camp, I went to Paris Island. My family came down for the graduation.
Yeah.
It's a big shing, you know, it's phenomenal. We're all squared away. Everybody's locked. Everything's snap, crackle, pop.
Yeah.
And my mother came to hug me the first time because the Marine Corps is the longest. It's 13 weeks. She came to hug me. I was like, Mom, no hugging in uniform. And she went, oh, my gosh, they did change. I was like, well, they might have. I was told. I didn't get into it. But my DI was like, any of you punks think you can go, you know, and last thing I want to see, any, I'll kick your any of you hug in uniforms. Wow.
But you loved it.
I loved the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
It was the camaraderie I was always looking for.
Yeah. Yeah,
I didn't get it out of my brothers. I didn't get it out of my family. My family was a pretty aggressive family.
Yeah.
I have one of five boys, three boys across the street that way, two boys that way. And I was the youngest. I got my ass kicked the whole time. Mm. And, of course, my brother, like my one brother, he was 8 years older than me. So, you know, like when you're 10 and your brother, he looks like you.
Yeah.
18 with a full beard, he's all jacked. Like those worlds are just completely different.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot different than like 30, 38, you know. 10.
Big spread between the kids.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I wanted to go in. I loved the camaraderie. Like, and then, of course, my alcoholism. I spiraled.
Fast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, real bad.
You could did you get kicked out?
Yes.
Yeah.
2.5 years later.
Wow.
I was always told don't get arrested, and I always got arrested.
Yeah, 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 of course. That's how my story ends. Every time I use, I go to jail.
Yeah.
it doesn't matter. It's like, it can be years, it can be months.
Yeah.
Like, from the time I was 15 and I started getting those like minor possession tickets to 18 and got four felonies for robbing a drug dealer. And then,
anything, right, to get out.
Of course. Well, he was out of town. It was like the perfect crime. You know what I mean? We knew there was stuff there. He was out of town.
We
can just go over. They're not going to report that.
Yeah.
He reported it. And then
somebody broke into my place.
Yeah, of course.
But he didn't say they took an eight ball or whatever.
No. Listen, the people we were with, they stole some other materials.
And that's what he leaned on.
Oh, yeah.
Just and that, to get you.
And the college I was at went a little crazy. There was a, you know, and they got a little wild. But, you know, that only got me sober for like 6 months.
Yeah.
Because I did what I needed to do to get back to life.
Yeah, but so it's, you know, if your life is, it's like a tide, you know, you may be out right now. And if you just keep plugging away, you got great support with Daniel. You're on TikTok. I see those roses going. I think that's really.
Yeah, the TikTok community has been phenomenal.
Have they?
Listen, I started this like a month ago.
Uh-huh.
We had 40 people. Today, we have almost 5,000.
What?
Yeah, dude. And it's amazing because there's like so many people that just want a community and just want to talk mental health and just be like, hey, let's do some simple questions. We check in every day and it's something we can do for free. It only takes me a few hours to just, you
do
know,
you do it live? Like the check-ins are live?
Yeah, everything's
so
live.
So they'll send you the question, then you'll prepare before you go live?
No.
Oh, right.
All
on
the questions come right now.
Oh, like, right on the fly.
There's questions on that screen right now.
Oh, that's awesome, man. That's good stuff there because there's no like pre-meditation, no manipulate, like
nothing.
It's all live and now.
Yeah.
And that's the hardest thing for people to do is live now. Everybody struggles living now.
Yeah.
Even though everything happens now.
It's the only thing that's real.
Right?
The moment.
Oh, I love that.
Well, yeah.
Dude, that's deep.
Well, listen, that's the true secret to happiness, right? To be happy, you have to be present.
100%.
Because if you're not, you're either torturing yourself with the past, you're thinking about your future, right? I try to catch myself constantly, even if I'm like looking at my clock and I'm like, oh, I got four more clients today. Like, what am I doing? What's the point? You know what I mean? If I'm not going to be in the moment, it's going to be dreadful.
Mm.
Like, and I like what I do. Like, I torture myself often. Like, I tell all my clients, like, my first thought in the morning, every morning, is I don't want to get up. Like, that's my depression talking to me all the time.
Yeah.
And then by the time I trick myself into taking a pee, taking a shower, having a coffee, and into the office, I'm like, oh, I love this.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I got everything I wanted, by the way. All my dreams came true.
That's like, what connects you, right, to self.
Yeah.
Like in your community and the people that you help, it's like you're connect. It's like you plug in, you just got to get there, and then you're like, boom.
Boom, good. Like I walk into my dream. Like I own my own business. There's no boss. And my dog is there.
That's the boss, though.
Oh, yeah.
Or is it the wife?
The wife.
The wife.
The wife's in control.
The wife, then the dog, then Daniel.
And then me. And me. But I couldn't have a better boss in the world.
Yeah.
Like, I listen to people that are in corporations talk all day. You know what I mean? It's hard.
I couldn't. It's not me.
Yeah. You're lucky. Good family-owned business you work for.
Beachway's phenomenal.
Yeah,
they're wonderful people. They're very good to me. They're very good to the staff, the clients. Like, it's one of the few places after almost 20 years of being in this field, because in this field, it's a tough field. What Daniel does, is very difficult, and you have to be fully vested, you know, and without it, it will chew you up, kind of like any other company, any other business, any other obligation, right? Because it's an obligation. Yeah. So I had never worked for a treatment center, and I've been there 7 years now. With the longevity that Beachway has as far as the staff goes and the employees, it's amazing. Yeah, our clinical director, and you got the credentials to do that and the skill set to do that. She's been doing it 11 years at Beachway.
Good for her.
Oh, she's solid. Yeah. I love her to death. And that's, you know, there's so many components over the last 18 years that I love doing what we do, because her name's Carrie. Carrie and I used to behavioral health tech together at a treatment center.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's the shit.
I'd talk on the golf cart, you know, and things were quiet. And she just went, soared, man. And like, I mean, soared, you know.
What back do you think your favorite part is?
Of the business?
Of your job, of the business, your job, whatever.
Oh, that's easy.
Yeah.
Well, Wednesday we had, it's our alumni meeting.
Yeah.
And I was invited and asked by somebody that I helped 2 years ago that came to Beachway.
Yeah.
For the last time. She was a repeat offender.
Love it. Frequent flyers. We call them frequent flyers in the treatment world.
And she invited me, asked me to give her her 2-year medallion, because I believed in her.
Yeah.
And I would always tell her, I'm not, I don't care whether you believe me or not, but I believe in you.
Yeah.
And I just, you know it when you see it. And so do you. You know it. You know all these cameras around. You all know it.
The success.
Game recognizes game and real recognizes real.
Yeah.
And, I've been very fortunate. Recovery, you know, is it's a gift denied so many. So for me, it's been so good to me, and I know a lot of people, blah, blah, blah. I believed in her. I said, if you start believing in yourself, I'll go out of my way to help you within reason. I'll go out of my way to help you because I see it.
Yeah.
And
she bought in.
She bought in, and that gave her an opportunity to get some employment. Tim. And she's been crushing it ever since. She's almost ready for a supervisory position.
Amazing.
But it's in recovery.
Yeah,
because I think that's one of our greatest weapons, our greatest tools, our greatest assets. Like, if you're struggling now, you know what it's like to go through the meat grinder. Even if you don't have substance abuse, mental health, or just life in general, like, you know what it's like. You know what the meat grinder feels like.
The repetitive, you know, tire stuck in the mud.
Right.
I'm going to do the same thing over and over and over. Nothing's going to change yet. I can't move. You know what I mean? It just takes that little action.
Correct.
It's not like people think it's going to be this monumental moment and the lights are going to shine down from the heavens. No.
Stop. No. Stop. It's so simple. It's elusive.
Yeah. I remember sitting in halfway and I could not figure out how I was going to get out, because like I was waiting tables at Flashback Diner in Boca.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been. Oh my gosh. Really?
Yeah.
Flashback?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
Dude, no one would hire me. My stupid resume was so dumb. Like it took me a while because I didn't dumb down my resume.
Yeah.
And my resume was like clinical director, CEO, therapist.
You're like, what's up with this guy?
And I'm walking into restaurants being like, please, dude, I need a job. Yeah. Like I had 1 week of pay at Halfway.
Yeah.
And then I was going to go rent. So I was like desperate. And no one would touch me. And I remember finally getting to a manager at Flashback. And I was like, listen, don't look at my resume. I just need a job. Yeah. I've waited tables. I'll wait tables again.
Yeah.
But I remember sitting in Halfway at what's the fuck of it? Boca House. I was doing the math. And like I had no car.
Yep.
I had nothing. Yep. No insurance, yep. No car, yep. Nothing.
Yep.
And I was like, there's zero way I'm ever going to get out of Halfway. Like, it logically, mathematically, none of it made sense. You know what I mean? And, like, I had to trust, because all the people in AA told me the same shit. Just trust the process. Do what you're supposed to do. And things magically will work out. And literally, magic happened. Like, 9 months in, while I was supposed to, I was on my amends, and, like, I was supposed to go make them to my family, and my sister called me from Atlanta, and she's like, nobody thinks this is a good deal or a good idea, but we want to give you a car. And I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, me and Derek think somebody needs to believe or needs to believe in you. And
I was like, how cool is that?
Holy crap, that's cool. I was like, I need to come make my amends anyway. Yeah. So, like, I'm on the plane, and then they call me, and they're like, listen, we talked to our lawyer. Supposedly, it's a terrible idea. We either have to sell you the car, which means that you would pretty much have a vehicle you could go pawn if you wanted, or we have to put you on our insurance. And given your history of being a raging addict, putting you on our insurance, our lawyer says, is terrible, because if you do anything, they're going to sue us for everything.
Yeah.
So I was like, whatever. You guys figure it out. Yep. If you want to, I'll take the car. Yep. If not, I'll fly back. And they literally were like, here, and they gave me the bill of sales.
Wow.
And I did like a payment plan of like $50 a week for forever.
God, I love recovery. I love comeback stories.
Yeah. By the way, guess what car I still drive?
What, say it again?
That's the car I drive. Still.
Still?
Still.
What?
Yeah.
How long have you been back now?
What do you mean, clean?
Yeah.
9 years almost.
So you've had that for 9 years?
Yeah.
Dude, that's
it's the best car ever. Yeah.
Dude, that's epic.
It's the car that
Holy cow.
But it was one of the, like, I didn't ask for it.
Yeah.
Right? I wasn't begging. I was just like doing the next right thing, going to meetings twice a day, waiting tables. My fucking feet hurt. I walked 2 miles from Boca House every day to Flashback Diner. And then I get off at 3, and maybe this guy named Cabot would pick me up. The overnight tech might be able to pick me up. And that was my life for like a year of like, how the fuck am I going to get out of here? And then magically, I got a nicer job at a nicer steakhouse, made a little bit more money. Eventually, I got hired as a therapist.
I love that.
But it like, it worked.
Yep.
But it shouldn't have. You know, on paper, it shouldn't have.
Yep.
And if I was to like not trust the guys in the program and like lead with my head, I would have done some dumb shit to try to speed it up.
Yep.
Versus just hold on.
Thank God you didn't have the Tim Roberto syndrome, you know?
I just
take all your little sayings and go, fuck you. Yeah, it's a mate. Dude, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. It was wild.
Yeah, I get it, man. I was cleaning toilets 18 years ago.
Were you?
Yeah, I was behind in my rent.
Yeah, it was the best.
And they just started taking off rent because I was cleaning toilets, picking up cigarette butts, garbage around the property.
I think recovery jobs, by the way, are like an essential piece for the people that make it.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't care what you did or what you do now.
Could care
like,
less.
If you are willing to humble yourself enough and do some like mindless task. I loved waiting tables because I went in.
Yep.
I waited.
Yep.
I made a few bucks.
Yep.
There was no thinking. I wasn't in charge of anybody. There was nothing to do.
You're good like that, too. I could see you being a multitasker.
Yeah, just like simple.
Yep.
And then stay sober. Those were like my only priorities in life.
It's so simple. It's elusive.
I know. People complicate the shit.
Right?
Every time. Oh, my God.
They had the same walk.
Yeah.
I walked around for 6 months. And I was walking back to Sober Living one day, and every time I go to the supermarket, which, you know, I mean, I went once a week, but I was on a very tight budget.
Of course. Dude, black beans and rice.
Oh, my God, and eggs when they're actually cheap.
Oh, man.
I would go to Publix. Publix, if you're not from down here, South Florida, it's a well-kept grocery store, and they're all over the place. Every time I went, because I walked from the halfway to Publix, it was night. Every once in a while, I get caught in the rain.
Yeah.
Yeah? Amidst South Florida pop-up storm. And after 6 months, I got it a couple times, you know? Like, I got whacked.
Yeah.
And one day was a tough day. I'm not saying the early is it's not an easy comeback in most cases. One day, I just took them all. I just threw them out in the middle of Federal Highway. This is fuck, kids, how the hell did I get here? Fucking threw them out. All of a sudden, it's like chong, 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 chong. All the cars are like smashing all my groceries.
What a solution, too. I'm frustrated with life, so let me just throw all my food away.
Oh, I was so tapped out, man. You know, because like I really mess things up. You know, smoking crack kind of messes things
up. Get out of here.
And it was like just horrible. You know, I was getting divorced. I signed my house over. The state took my kids away from me. And I'm walking at, I came around this to last night at 44. I'm walking down Federal Highway in Salvador, a little bag of groceries, cleaning toilet bowls, you know.
How did my life
and I had guys like Daniel, just keep coming. It gets me. I had the Tim Roberto syndrome.
Yeah, it's awful, right?
And then here I am, like, if you would have told me this initially. But it's very forgiving. My life today, and one of my goals is to show people that life is here for them, not against them.
It's beautiful.
And I can help that through my experience. I can help that by bringing them to places, which gives them the opportunity to see, you know, like, hey, I'm not doing as bad as I think I am, you know. It's a matter of seeing it or exposing yourself to it or experiencing it. You know, if you're a little kid growing up in an aggressive home, you know, that experience isn't very nice and it has a very not very nice effect.
There's something great about it, though. Like, I remember sitting in a homeless shelter in Boca Raton and I was eating the hamburger helper, you know what I mean? And I'm literally, I'm looking all around and it's like, you know, it's homeless people all around me. And I'm thinking to myself, like, this was literally my worst fear, was like going broke, because my dad instilled, like, you always need money in me. Yeah. And it was like my biggest fear was being broke. And, like, not having anything. And, like, I was just sitting there, and I was eating my hamburger helper, and I was like, I'm actually okay. You know what I mean? And it was, like, this great relief just came over me. It's like, everything bad happened. I had 9 pending felony charges. Yep. I lost my license to practice. I had no real way to make money. I didn't have a key to my house. I lived in halfway. I had, like, a garbage bag full of clothes, right?
Yep.
And I was okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, fuck.
Because you had everything you needed.
I did. I was like...
Yeah, you know, the basic necessity, yeah. Right?
It was like, oh, man. Like, it just shows you, like, your brain overcomplicates and makes these big, scary things. Like, I'm not saying it didn't suck.
Yeah.
But
there
was such relief in going, Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I know I tried my best to learn as much as possible. Obviously, I still want to learn. Because I can't until the day I die.
Yeah, of course.
You know, that's my gift. Even though it's killing me one day at a time, it still allows me to be the best version of myself.
Well, it makes life interesting. If you stay humble and willing to be open-minded to learn new stuff, like, it makes life very interesting to go. Like, even this, like, the whole TikTok internet experience for me has been, like, this whole, like, I don't know. I didn't know anything about this a month ago.
Just went on.
And I was like, let's just... I had a client actually goes, you should go live. And I was like, what? He's like, you should do this, go live. I'm like, all right, let's try it. But like, it's been exciting. It's been fun. So I feel like so many people get stuck in the routine of life.
How often do you go on?
Every day.
God, I wonder how many people you've touched already. Like,
I've done 110 hours.
What?
In a month, yes. We have 1.7 million likes. And I think we've...
What, in total sessions, you mean?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then, like, there's been thousands and thousands of views.
For real?
Yeah.
Holy cow.
You got to do it. I'm going to get you on it.
Are you?
Yeah. All right. You're going to have your own little Beachway live session.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fun.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So as a licensed clinician, and I know that, by the way, I think you said you had some doubters. I haven't even been to his office. Stop. 110 hours and not one dime. Stop.
Yeah, we've actually lost $600 because we've been giving away books.
Oh, yeah. He's losing. Stop.
I did the hours of how much I would have made if I would have worked those hours.
Oh, my Lord.
$16,000.
Wow.
Yeah. But we love it.
100%. It's passing the baton.
It's like being able to scholarship someone for treatment. It
comes back.
It feels good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
So as a you know, licensed clinician, a seasoned clinician.
Sure.
How do you feel trauma
contributes
to mental health and addiction?
One, I think a lot of us underestimate what trauma is. So it's a big thing. Like, trauma might not be defined in your mind, like, again, we're downplaying a lot of things.
Yeah.
So like when we do trauma assessments, I hear people like tell me horrific things.
Yeah.
And like they're smiling, they're laughing. So there's not a lot of congruency. But trauma is probably one of the biggest factors we got to look at when trying to get sober or trying to deal with any mental health. And I think the majority of people have some form of it. So it's a big thing. I think it's big for therapists to be trauma informed, to actually know, like, hey, wait a minute, I got to be okay and make this safe for my client to open up because they've already been really hurt.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is childhood, you know, which makes it even worse. So like we do a big thing of like reparenting the child is like a big saying of mine. So like if I really want to show self-care and self-esteem, I got to show myself I can take care of myself. And for a lot of adults, it's very hard to do that. Like you walking down Federal and throwing your groceries.
Yeah.
That wasn't the adult you.
No, it was the pissed off kid.
It was the little wounded boy.
Yeah.
And like, how do we show up for him in that moment and actually have a conversation on that level to help walk through that? You know, especially as we walk through childhood trauma of like showing up for ourselves in a different way when we didn't have mom or dad or grandma and grandpa or whoever to teach us how to really take care of that child.
Is there a characteristic that separates PTSD from trauma, or are they kind of like a merged
I think
condition?
Yeah.
Or are they completely different?
No, I think they're merged. And I'm not... I'm not the biggest trauma expert, you know what I mean? I do work with it because I deal with a lot of addiction work, but I wouldn't be the first to like say Daniel's the trauma guy.
Gotcha.
You know, like Catherine in our practice, she does EMDR and she's much more informed.
And EMDR just takes you back to the circumstance, right? Or the event?
I think it allows you to like put the memories and the feelings back to where they belong, you know, and it allows it to settle. So it's not in the forefront and continuing to torture you in a sense.
What do you think drives the addict?
Oh my goodness. So for me, it's a brain disease, right?
Agree. Totally agree.
Like I don't, and I think this is confusing for a lot of people too, because I think there's a lot of heavy users out there that get confused as addicts.
Yep.
And it also sets the example, like clients come in and be like, my Uncle Tony stopped drinking and now he has one beer a week and he's okay. For me, that guy's not a real addict. He's what we call a heavy user.
Correct.
Because when the brain disease, like I still remember like the first time I did like the white powdery substance, I wanted to give away everything and just do that all the time. Like there was this instant moment of like,
that's it.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is like the best
utopia
ever. Like, what have I been doing with all my money and all my time? And like, I became preoccupied with that. That's not a normal response.
That's hardcore addiction. Right?
Yes, that's not real for most people. Yeah. Like the first time I had a drink, I was like, oh, this is cool. I want to be drunk every day. You know, I remember sitting at a bar in Atlanta at like 22 years old on a Wednesday, and I was trying to figure out how do I stay drunk and smoke cigarettes. On a weekday, all the time. And it kept, my life kept fucking with my addiction. You know what I mean? I had to go to work. I had to do all these things. And it kept getting in the way of what I wanted to do. It was like the same thing when I got prescribed certain drugs. I was like, oh, this is a clean version of that other stuff.
Yeah.
And I get it from the pharmacy all the time. This is great, you know? So for me, you got to understand that part of the addict brain. It's like the guy that can leave half the beer on the table is not an addict. You know, and we all look at that guy and wonder what's wrong with him. You know, so it starts there. If you understand that you think differently, that's really the driving force for addiction is understanding, oh, wait a minute, my brain is completely different and thinks different. So it's not driven by any rational, logical, you know, you wouldn't do the things you did. As a licensed therapist, I would not have sold drugs and did drugs as a practicing therapist if it was logical. It made zero sense.
No kidding.
You know what I mean?
But so, the addiction just trumped everything, right?
100%. So you have to understand that that's the driving force. It isn't because we hate you. We don't love you.
Yeah.
You know, we're trying to hurt somebody. We're... You know, it's because we literally have a brain that speaks a different language. And until you understand that language, you'll continue to do those things. Like, that was the biggest educational piece for me is, like, I remember it clicking in, like, in AA one day because I was using in AA. And I was like, I used to say I was an alcoholic, but I didn't understand it. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But when I finally got fully sober, I was like, oh, this book actually makes so much more sense to me now. Like, I get it. Like, it's literally, like, it speaks to you. It tells you exactly what it's going to do.
It's kind of like somebody who's good with math.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, because to me, math is like, or mathematics is like, it's a certain language.
Of course.
And if you don't grab it, it's really difficult
to understand.
To understand, right? And on a personal note, too, did you find, like, did it help you with your dyslexia in any way? Like, did something? Did something straighten out? Or, because I know, like, some people who are, say they're bipolar.
Yeah.
And they smoke crack.
Yeah.
And they
it levels them out.
It levels them out. Like, did that do that for you with the dyslexia? Or?
So it helped me because the only way I learned to read was I learned through memorization. So unless I've heard a word, I can't sound it out. So I have no phonetics, right? So any new word on the page looks like it's funny because the people on TikTok have all these weird names and I'm just throwing letters together. No idea what they mean. So like my way of studying was I would have to do these like marathon study sessions because I did not want to be embarrassed. Like I did part of a PhD. You know how embarrassing is when the teacher's like, can you read this? And I'm like, no. I didn't even know it was dyslexia until I was like 38 years old. Like,
what did you think was wrong then prior to 38?
I just thought I was stupid. So I was listening.
You're getting a PhD and
I was listening to a podcast on neurodivergent stuff and dyslexia because I always thought it was just the flip of letters.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know there was different versions of it. And one of the versions is you don't have phonetics. You can't sound out words. So nobody ever told me, I had ADHD. I only was diagnosed with ADHD because of those four felonies. I went to a therapist in college, and they're like, there's a reason this guy's robbing drug dealers. He's impulsive. He's got ADHD. That's what's wrong. So that was like, oh, wait a minute. Maybe there's something wrong with my head. And then the dyslexia, and I'm on the spectrum too, and that happened when I was like 38. I was like, oh my God, this is all my struggles with relationships. This is like, because my brain is so logical and so like.
Like everything's black and white.
And just like, it's like upsetting. Like this morning I got into a thing with my wife because like she parked her car so close to my car. But I always park in this other space on the street. So I don't have to get tight with the cars. And I was just I was like, I don't understand why you wouldn't put my car back in its space. She put it next to her car. I was like, it's just.
Get you.
And my language is not the nicest. The autism just flat effect of just like, hey, why wouldn't you just do that? And she's just like, why can't you just not be a dick in the morning?
Simply put.
But speed did help me study to be more effective so I could cover it up more. You know what I mean?
So when you're studying, you're reading stuff that was already stored in your brain through memorization.
And back in the day before we had the internet, like I'd have to read so much context to understand a word. So like if I didn't have like
Google, a word that you didn't recognize, you mean you would have to read around it?
Like I would all the read words around it, and then I would finally come back and be like, oh, that's what that means. It's one of the reasons I never went to med school.
I'm surprised you never invented anything.
That's
crazy.
I would have gone to med school, but like the language of medicine was so overwhelming that I was like, I'll never be able to spell or memorize any of this.
I look up diagnosis like in the DSM-5 or like, I don't know, online. It's like, huh? What's that word? What? A lot of Latin stuff.
Thankfully, the internet came through, and now I can just like Google and like I'll just hit repeat on the sound thing until it gets into my head.
Repeat. Oh, so you're listening to the definition? Like,
no, I'm listening to the word.
I mean, to the word. But so is that kind of like a little Rain Man-ish?
I have no idea.
Like you remember a lot of stuff.
I try.
Like if we were reading something right now, we open something.
No, I don't. And there was a photographic.
That's what photographic.
Yeah.
But
I have a. But
if we were reading something and there was a word in there that you don't know,
yeah,
you would be like, "What's that?"
I can't sound it out. No.
I'm trying to catch up to you, man. I'm really slow. So if you're reading, you're reading out of memory.
Yeah.
Because you've
the only words you remember what the word looks like. What's on the page? Yes.
God, it's such a trip, man. Holy cow! I can't even get my. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around that.
Oh God,
it's really deep.
It was just a hard thing, and then like my family was so against like. My dad's a PhD therapist, but he was like, they're also against diagnosis and like
labels.
Like they even like all my kids go to therapy already. And they're like, you want to do that to your children? I'm like, yes. Dude, we want them to have the assistance and the help they need.
Heck yeah.
You know, because it's important.
I mean, for me, I never had anybody to talk to. So I thought it was just me.
Yeah.
Something must be wrong with me.
No.
My dad blew me off. My mom just kept saying, everything's going to be okay, honey. But never like.
She's overwhelmed.
Yeah, but never, what can I help you with? Yeah. Or, you know, let's sit down and talk, and maybe I can explain something. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
I always just said my dad had a bad day after I just got whacked in the butt with the belt. You know?
I was listening to somebody.
Oh, my God.
It was talking
okay,
about
Mom.
The standard for a father in 1950s is to go to work.
Like,
that was it.
That was it.
That was the bar back in the day. Like
my father, before he went corporate, would do overnights at the hospital.
Yeah.
He was internal medicine.
Yeah.
And I learned how to love my father in recovery. But I, as a little boy, when I knew he wasn't coming home that night,
good.
It was like Christmas.
Yeah. Here's your trauma.
Oh God, it was
hypervigilance. Got to be on guard.
Oh my
watch out for
God. Oh, I can still to this day I look at people. They don't even have to say anything. I can tell what's up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, kids are always seeking safety, we call it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're always trying to be safe
in
one way or the other. Like, they're not manipulative.
Yep.
I mean, there are your certain diagnoses that can be a little bit.
But
most kids are, like, genuinely just trying to be safe.
You know how many people, when I facilitate groups, because Beachway gives me the honor and still allows me to do that, I said, please don't – give me at least a couple of days. I want to be with my people.
Yeah.
They're very accommodating, but
I love group, by the way.
I love group, man.
Isn't it the best?
Come in one day and do one with me.
So many people are scared of group
because it's the real deal. I mean, a therapist one-on-one, no disrespect to any therapist. I got, you know, mad love for, I work with so many, but some of them. These guys can manipulate easily. Tell them what they want to hear. They've been doing it so long. Look,
and if you're burnt out, you'll let that shit slide.
100%.
Because you don't have to challenge the client at all.
Yeah, next.
All right.
Yeah.
Whatever. You want to talk for 40 minutes? Go for it.
No kidding.
It won't push you at all.
Yeah.
You
know? But it comes up a lot. Like, I don't tell them it's me, but I say, from your experience, anybody in here, which it's me, and when their father would come home at night, did they go, Dad's home.
Ooh. Butthole. Sure. Of course.
Dad's home. Yeah. And they all the hands go up. And that was me. Yeah. But
with Mom, I bet, threatened Dad. Did she threaten?
My father. But would she threaten my dad?
No, would she threaten you with Dad?
Oh, yeah.
I
have to believe the police officer when your father's not here. I don't want to be the police. That's your fault.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell Dad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
We were all terrified. My dad wasn't even like a scary guy, but we were terrified of him. And we went to my mother for everything.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I could.
Way softer.
I never told my dad anything.
Of course. I didn't.
Nothing.
I threw a party when I was 15 years old, right? Not crazy. It was like a few people. And I'm like a nice kid at that point, right? Like, genuinely just want to be liked, having some people over, drink some beer, smoke a little, you know? So we had a cop in my neighborhood. Like, that's the kind of neighborhood I grew up in. We had our own police department.
Oh, wow.
It was one guy. His name was Jimmy Deedles.
Oh, wow.
Right? And Jimmy Deedles' whole mission was to mess up the party. Now, this is real life Myrtle Beach stuff. If anybody knows Myrtle Beach, they know Jimmy Deedles. And his whole mission was to mess up the party, right? So, of course, he comes and he busts the party. And, like, the nice kid I am, I literally go, everybody's like, just run. I open the door.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, I don't want to be in trouble. He comes in, doesn't find anything, like, because there's beers in the fridge. It just looks like a regular house.
Yeah.
And all the kids are gone.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, I'm going to talk to your parents later. So I call my dad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, Dad, I want to be honest with you. This is what happened.
Yeah.
There was beer. Some kids were smoking pot.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot. He proceeds to literally call my whole high school's parents and tell them they were at my house drinking and smoking.
Jimmy?
No.
Jimmy Calder.
My father. Talk about trust.
That's it. I'm never saying anything.
Ever again.
Ever.
I will never tell you. And then I was like in my freshman year of high school, like the biggest rat. You know, that cool reputation. And I'm like, oh my God. What? What just happened?
You know what I mean?
So not only do I not trust, you know, now I got all these people hating on me.
Yeah.
And like, I'm just trying to be like, you're just trying to be like a nice person. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I thought I would do the right thing.
Yeah. That's the last time I do the right thing.
Of course. And that like literally started this whole secret. But you know secrets of addiction of like, oh, I'm never telling you anything ever again because I don't trust that you're not going to hurt me with it.
And I can guarantee you if you ask me how I'm doing, good and fine.
Yeah.
Good and fine. Especially after experience like that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but that was when Dad would come home. It was that... feeling, you know, and then when I started smoking weed at 11, I was scared the heck out of me initially, but I'll tell you, man, the first couple of times, all the eggshells went poof.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God.
I can relax.
And then one time, I remember doing it like a couple, not that far behind, before my dad got home, because I was petrified too. But, you know, I liked the way I felt, so it got closer and closer and closer, because he always came home around 6:30.
And kept pushing it?
Oh, yeah, right up to... And then one day, it was real close to when he got home. You know, the gum.
Of course.
The toothbrush.
Lysol spray.
And then that one time, though, when Dad came home after all those years, you know, 11's like infinity when you're a little kid.
Yeah, of course.
Dad came home, and I heard that door close, and instead of going, my whole life, I was just like, Dad's home.
Yeah.
Dude, that was like people, that was like this pivotal shift. I was like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life. Kind of like what you were talking about, drink. I just want to drink on until I was 44.
Yeah. Why not?
Brutal.
We found a way.
So brutal. Yeah. I think we're going to start wrapping it up, wind it down a little bit. Okay. Obviously, you got this incredible following.
Well, everyone should know that I own Transcend Wellness. It is a men's only intensive outpatient. It's owned by me, my wife, Catherine Lovern. She's at LCSW, and my sister-in-law, Emily Wood. She's at LMHC. And what sets us apart is our ratio. So we only take 12 men at a time. And for those 12 men, we have 4 full-time therapists. So it's a 3-to-1 client to therapist ratio. We do primary mental health and substance, and we're family owned and operated. So there's no big corporation. There's no big people telling us how to do therapy. It's what we decide is best for the clients with our medical director. But it's a very small niche program,
which, by the way, have the highest success rates. In my humble opinion.
Well, listen, we can give more attention to somebody than your giant programs just based on like our size. Like I get to call, I text every one of our clients every morning. Everybody gets all 3 of our personal cell phone numbers. Yeah. It's just, we know it.
Yeah. And I've been there. I've met the dog. I've met the wife. I haven't met the kids yet, but that's okay.
You
want
to meet the kids? I'll give them to you for the weekend. They'll do you think they can walk that 98 miles for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been there. I can vouch for it. I know it when I see it. Otherwise, he wouldn't be here just because of the process for me that I feel is really sacred. Recovery, I think, is a very sacred gift. So with that being said, anybody that comes on here as a guest, I feel I'm okay with because Beachway's been very good to me too, and they have that philosophy too. We're on a larger scale, but we still don't go over 6.
No, I've been to Beachway too, and it's amazing.
And we don't go over 6.
Yeah,
each primary therapist, their max is 6 caseload, and when we're full, we have 75 happy people. So you do the math. We rather have more therapists than
as you should,
as we should.
This is like one of the most wild, cunning, baffling diseases there is.
It's just the right thing to do. It's the appropriate thing to do. It's the professional thing to do. I mean, when you get rid of, Beachway's very high. It's a lovely place. You get rid of all that.
Yeah.
And I, for me, and I know you do too, I know there's plenty of people that do, we're always mindful that alcohol kills alcoholics and drugs kill drug addicts. So if you can do it, always do the right thing because it always materializes. Like it just does.
There's abundance.
Correct. If you are a first responder, if you have a first responder family member, if you're a veteran currently serving or served, we're grateful for you and we're grateful for the service that you give to our communities. It would be a total disaster without you people.
1,000%.
So we're very grateful. So as a Marine, 4 years ago, I started stomping out the stigma. The acronym is SOTS. And if you just put an inc.org, you can go to the website, SOTSinc.org. You can see what I'm doing, what we're doing. We use a lot of licensed therapists like Daniel to help. We are in Florida, Georgia, and in New Jersey now. Very
great. Free therapy, right?
I'm sorry?
Free therapy?
Free therapy. There's no reporting to your agencies.
All you guys out there that say you can't get services, if you're a veteran, first responder, free therapy, guys.
Yeah, no diagnosing, no reporting to your agency, no insurance, nothing, no paperwork, minimal paperwork, because there's still, say, like Daniel, a licensed clinician involved, so they have to, obviously, by legally, they have to report, you know, certain things, but that's, you know, if you have a plan, then they got to report that. If you just have some ideations, I think they can work with that. But if you have, that's the only thing, my understanding. And I've known these people for years.
Yeah.
10 sessions, and we work really hard right
that's
now.
That's amazing.
Like we said before, I'm training. Yeah. I did 9 miles today. I have to work up. I got people coming in from all over. Of course, the young bucks, you first responders. I think you're better.
Somebody come walk with Tim.
You understand this, too. I got a guy coming out of Texas, rucking.
Yeah.
Would wait.
Really?
Yeah, young Badu, emergency response guy. Yeah. It's huge. It's every year. It keeps growing and growing. Come on in. You can make a donation on the website if you like. Email? You got an email?
Yeah, info, I-N-F-O, at southfloridamentalhealth.com. And our website is southfloridamentalhealth.com.
That's probably easier. The email already went.
Yeah.
But southfloridamentalhealth.com,
yeah.
I can keep that because I still got some mental health.
Yeah, Transcend Wellness, IOP, on all the social medias if you guys want to follow.
Yeah. I'm tim.r at beachway.com. I'm all over social media as well. If you need me to connect you with Daniel for whatever reason, I know I just gave you information, but for whatever
reason. You can call
reason.
Me too, 404-668-8369. My number is all over the internet.
All right, now you can leave me out of it then. Just call him direct.
Call me direct. It's better if you text me, honestly. I'll get back to you quicker.
Yeah.
I'm in and out of meetings.
Yeah. Yeah. TikTok, thank you for the support.
TikTok, let's go.
You guys are crushing it. Hopefully we delivered something of value to you in this casual conversation. I think that's a lot of magics in casual conversations. And with that being said, I know Dan, he's on the same page. We wish you peace and love. Have a great rest of your day.
Love it. We're out.